welcome back to Crime Kooks with your favorite hosts, Rachel and
Emily, where we ramble about crimes and perpetrators that we know just a little too much about. In this episode, or more of the season premiere, we will be discussing Charles Manson, a kinky cult leader with an affinity for murder. So to just give a little overview of who Charles Manson was, he was an American criminal and cult leader of the Manson family cult, who led a murderous spree with the aid of all of his followers that were primarily young women and girls. So for his early life, how did this guy start out? So Charles Mills Manson was born November 12, 1934 in Cincinnati, Ohio. He was born to his mother, Kathleen Maddox, a 16-year-old alcoholic and prostitute, who was arrested in 1939 for armed robbery.
So he kind of grew up with a life of crime around him.
Pretty much. Kathleen actually went on to marry a different man named William Manson, but the marriage ended abruptly and Charles was placed in a boys' school at the age of 12.
Is William Manson famous for anything? Did it mention that? Because his name is incredibly familiar.
His name might sound familiar. From what we know, there's not, like, a whole lot of major crimes that he did. It's really just his son that did the major crimes. We do know that, obviously, Kathleen was kind of a raging alcoholic, so that's fun. Charles continued his early childhood living on the streets after his mother actually rejected him, and over the following two decades, he was in and out of reform schools and prisons.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah, we got some serious mommy issues here. Yeah, poor Charles didn't have a very good early life. But to go on, there's pretty much he was just in and out of all these reform schools and prisons throughout his entire adolescence. And then he went on to marry Rosalie Willis in 1955, and they ended up actually having a Charles, or having a child, not a Charles.
Having a Charles.
Technically, his name was Charles Manson Jr., so there you go. Yeah, he followed in his father's footsteps, kind of. I mean, he went on to be a criminal. Yeah, he ended up stealing cars, got arrested for auto theft, and Charles and his wife, Rosalie, ended up getting divorced in 1958, and he ended up losing custody of the child. So Rosalie didn't do a good job of raising him, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Well, ironically, stealing cars and auto theft might be the same thing.
No, he was arrested for auto theft because he was stealing the cars.
I know, I just thought it was funny because you were like, oh, he was stealing cars and then he got arrested for auto theft. And I was like, okay.
Oh, oops, my bad. Okay, but yeah. So anyways, Manson went to prison again. Yeah, that happens. He does, like, a lot of petty theft and crap when he's younger and apparently still now. Eventually, he was released in March 21st of 1967 from the prison that he was in, and he moved to San Francisco. So this is kind of the beginning of his real crimes, the ones that people know the most about. So to give a little bit of background, the Manson family cult consisted of roughly 100 members who shared a passion for the habitual use of hallucinogenic drugs, so, like, LSD, mushrooms, you know, the fun stuff.
So I wouldn't exactly call any of that fun. I don't think anyone's ever had a positive hallucination.
But they were having fun, you know, murdering people. The cult's main location was in San Francisco, you know, as I stated earlier. But they did eventually move to another deserted ranch in the San Fernando Valley, which honestly reminds me a lot of the Waco tragedy. You know, I feel like a lot of these cults just go off into abandoned ranches and just have their own little civilization until the FBI comes and, like, everyone dies. That's what happened in Waco anyway.
It kind of makes me think of Midsommar.
That's true. Yeah, with all, like, you guys should check out that movie. It's really good. Just, like, all these creepy cult members in just this abandoned area. It's wild.
Right, right.
So, you know, as we were talking about earlier with the followers, they were mostly women. There was, like, a small group of devout young girls who believed that Manson's claims that he was Jesus and his prophecies of a future race war.
Weren't they all kids who had, like, struggles with their families and whatnot, and so they weren't really, they didn't have much anywhere else to go, right?
Yeah, a lot of them did have a lot of troubles, and they, like, either ran away or they met Charles through some form like that, and that's how they came to, like, be such devout believers in him. Yeah.
I see.
So the funny thing is with Charles Manson, he followed this concept of Helter Skelter, you know, that song by the Beatles, which was an apocalyptic philosophy predicting an eventual race war and the five ruling angels that would emerge from that war, which Manson would take on the role of Jesus and then the four members of the Beatles.
She meant philosophy.
Yeah, I can't say words. It's fine. So, yeah, you know, they believe this wild stuff. I mean, yeah, I like the Beatles, too. I think he took it a bit far, but...
Yeah, my dad loves the Beatles, but, you know, he's not a murderer, as far as I'm aware. So...
The cult did, you know, speaking of murders, they did... They are believed to have, like, killed around 35 people. There's only, like, the major ones that we're going to go over today, but there are going to be some links in the description to other various websites so you can check out all their other different crimes. Most of these cases of these killings lacked a lot of evidence, so they were never tried in court.
Mm-hmm.
And so, basically, with the first main major crime that this cult carried out, there was a drug dealer named Bernard Crowe that threatened the Manson family cult. So Charles Manson decided to take, you know, this into his own hands, and he shot him. The guy didn't actually die. He went on to the hospital. This was in July 1969, by the way. But the body of a gang member from the Black Panthers turned up a couple days later after this guy had been shot. So Manson thought that this dude, this Crow dude, was a part of that gang. And so he decided to turn the residents of the cult into this whole defensive camp because he was afraid that the cult or that the gang would retaliate.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, not exactly fun stuff. I wouldn't enjoy being used as a defense weapon.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's all kinds of measures, and they basically just turned it into this whole wild military-type camp. They stole, like, dune buggies and crap. It was crazy.
And what's crazy is they all thought, yeah, this is okay. If this is, I'm doing God's work.
On God. So then Manson, like, his next major crime, he held this guy, Gary Hinman, hostage for 2 days and then decided to kill him because originally his, like, original intentions were he wanted this guy to join the cult and turn over his money that he was believed to have inherited to like, help out the cult and basically pay for all their different things that they wanted to do. And obviously, you know, the guy refused, so, you know, point blank to the head, you know, funsies. Killed him.
Funsies, sure. If that's what you want to call it.
Yeah.
I don't really see, I mean, 2 days. I feel like that he should have given him more time to decide because, awful as it sounds, that man could still be alive if he gave him more time to decide and, like, did stuff, you know, to make him choose.
Honestly, I just think that this guy, Charles, as we'll kind of get more into, was a pretty impatient man. He wanted everything, and he, like, wanted it now. He had all these prophecies and everything, and he just wanted all of this power. So you'll see he's kind of a very impatient man.
He would be.
Yeah. And then later on, going on to some more crimes, on August 9th of 1969, four of Manson's followers were sent to Celio Drive above Beverly Hills, and they decided to go on a murderous rampage. Five people were left dead, including one Sharon Tate, who was a famous actress and was also pregnant, about 7 months, I believe. And she and three of her friends, along with a young man who was there to visit the caretaker of the estate, all died.
Can I ask if they were able to save the child? Because sometimes they're able to do that, like save the child, even though the mother has passed.
No, the child was not able to be saved.
That's sad.
Yeah. So technically it was six victims, if you really think about it.
Yeah, because she was far enough along.
And then the following night, after they murdered all these people, some of Manson's followers murdered Lino and Rosemary LaBianca in their home in the Los Feliz section of Los Angeles. This time, Manson decided to go along to make sure that the killings were carried out correctly. The words "Death to Pigs" and "Helter Skelter" were found printed on the wall and on a refrigerator door in the house.
Well, I mean, first of all, that's how you get caught.
That actually is. That's how the, as we'll talk about later, that's actually how the police connected the whole philosophy of the Helter Skelter to the Manson family cult and how they got taken down.
Of course. I'm just saying, you don't leave evidence. Why would you ever leave evidence?
But the issue with some of this evidence is police work back then wasn't the best. In fact, some other evidence that was found relating to this crime was there's a gun discovered by a 10-year-old boy around the residence, like in the bushes. But the police mishandled the investigation, so it took longer to solve.
When is it ever good?
Yeah, honestly, that's pretty much why they were never caught.
Exactly.
It took like a year after, multiple years after these crimes were committed for them to actually, like, you know, turn up with anything at all leading to Manson. Mm-hmm. The Colts, you know, they carried out other petty crimes and thefts, but these were like their major crimes. Like, you know, as I mentioned earlier, they like stole military equipment and stuff, like dune buggies, all that stuff to make the defense camp. But those were all like the major murders. So kind of like onto the investigation, this is how they really figured out how Manson did these crimes and how they connected them all to him. So in most of these cases, more specifically the Tate and LaBianca cases, went unsolved for over a year before Manson was tied back to the crimes. So the detectives working the LaBianca case checked with the sheriff's office to see if there were any connections to other cases, and were actually able to discover the Hinman case, you know, the hostage one.
Right, so they actually did something smart.
Yeah, they started to make the connection and see, hey, I think we're seeing something here. There's, like, some things that are lining up. I think this is committed by the same person.
Good, good.
So this connection actually led them to the girlfriend of one of the members of the cult who had recently been arrested. This arrest was for car theft, and this car theft arrest actually led them to desert ranches that the cult had moved to in order to access the bottomless pit. So basically, they wanted to access this, like, Death Valley hole in the ground, I guess, for more rituals. That's the reason that they moved to this whole deserted ranch, other than to just, you know, for more defense measures.
I mean, it is called the Death Valley, so.
Yeah. But basically, the arrest was taken from there because she stole different cars and they were traced back to that place. So this led authorities to raid the Myers and Baker ranches following the trail of clues left when the cult burned an earth mover, which is a heavy equipment used in construction, owned by a Death Valley National Monument. Okay, so that's really confusing. So basically what happened is it's like all these series of events. So basically the cult decided to just burn this heavy piece of machinery. I guess they didn't like it. I don't really know. They're not very smart people. Mm-hmm. So this just led to a whole trail of them to, you know, one location to another until they finally got to the discovery of many other stolen vehicles, like dune buggies, and this led to the subsequent arrest of 24 people, including Manson himself.
Mm-hmm. I still can't get over the fact he talked about an earth mover, and I instantly thought of, like, flat earthers, but, like, slightly different. I was like, oh, they burned a person? And then you were like, you know, a vehicle. And I was like, oh.
You know, I wouldn't put it past them to do something like
that. You know, I wouldn't either. So I was like, okay. And then you said it was like, you know, construction stuff. And I was like, ooh.
No, yeah, they like stole all this heavy machinery. And that's this funny thing is, that's what led them to get caught. Like, all these little trails of evidence. It sounds kind of confusing when you say it, like, just out loud. But, like, to break it down, basically, they just followed the little clues that were left behind until it finally led to Manson and, you know, some of his followers.
Well, yeah, there's no such thing as the perfect crime. Except for, you know, if you talk to Dwight Schrute, of course. but either way, the more crimes you commit, the more evidence you leave behind.
That's true. That's definitely true. The issue is, again, the authorities didn't even make the connections to Manson and the other murders until later because of a lot of different mishandlings of investigations. And honestly, a lot of their crimes were not connected. They just murdered a bunch of random people, whether it be because they thought it was, like, for their cause, you know, helter skelter or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Helter skelter.
Because, like, Manson's main goal was to get rid of the rich and beautiful. So, like, he wanted to make them pay. So he pretty much just killed a bunch of random actresses and then people who happened to be nearby.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of made it hard to be like, okay, who the heck is doing this?
You know, I'm going to be honest. Every single time you say Helter Skelter, I think of Hocus Pocus, the Halloween movie. So I just thought I'd bring that up because I do think of that literally every single time. And, you know, that movie starts out a little dark too. Just, you know, exactly like Charles Manson's, you know, entire business.
Great way to connect that.
Thank you. I tried.
Just dropping that in there. Yeah, I mean, you guys should totally watch the movie. I've never seen it, but it's probably pretty good.
We'll watch it.
All right, cool. So anyways, after the police finally did their job correctly, we moved to the trial date. So on July 24th of 1970, the Tate-LaBianca trial with defendants Charles Manson, Susan Atkins, Patricia Krenwinkel, and Leslie Van Houten opened in Los Angeles. And those people that I just listed were pretty much the major people that were caught during the raid. And those were the main, you know, people who went with Charles Manson to kill those people.
Who are also victims themselves. Like,
yeah, when you really think about it.
Yeah. Like, they did all these crimes, but also they were under heavy manipulation tactics and thought it was, you know, the word of God. And if you're a heavily religious person, that can be something that can really sway you. And then now that they know he's, you know, a not great human being, as they thought he was, that can be really, like, upsetting and can really cause a lot of mental trauma.
Yeah, because the thing with Charles Manson is, in a lot of ways, he actually was what you would call, like, a good leader. He was charismatic. He was smart. He thought of a lot of things. He was able to manipulate these girls to, like, follow in his cult. And that's what a lot of cult leaders do. There's, like, Hitler. That whole... Yes, kind of. So, like, there's this whole, like, list. There's, like, a pyramid of how cult leaders get followers to, like, you know, follow them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting, and you can kind of see that with Charles Manson and a lot of other different types of cults, like David Koresh with his Davidians, again, back to Waco, which we should definitely talk about in a future episode.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, just dropping that in there. You guys should check that one out because it's going to be cool. Anyways, so back to the trial. So, again, we see that the trial opened in Los Angeles, and then later on March 29th of 1971, the penalty phase of the trial concluded, and the jury fixed the penalty as death for all four of the Tate-LaBianca defendants. But on April 19th, 1971, Judge Older sentenced Manson to death. Manson was then sent to San Quentin's death row. However, on February 18th, 1972, the California Supreme Court declared it unconstitutional, and Manson's sentence became life in prison rather than death.
Yeah, well, you know, life in prison rather than death is so much worse, I feel. A lot of times, people who do really bad things can get into a lot of trouble with other inmates just because they stayed alive rather than, you know, dying.
Yeah. Basically, what you're saying is, like, Charles Manson kind of got what he deserved in a way.
Yeah, he definitely got what he deserved for, you know, mass manipulation. I mean, that's still used today, even on just regular people, which, I mean, the girls he dealt with and the other individuals were all regular people until they weren't. Thanks to him, so I guess they should thank him for making them famous.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think he kind of deserved what he got, and he, later on, we do see that the other family members did also get justice served. A lot of them were convicted and sentenced throughout the following years for the other crimes that they were either linked to or the other crimes that were committed. And it turns out that Manson obviously is dead now. Right. On November 19th of 2017, Manson died of natural causes at the age of 83 in the Kern County, California hospital.
Oh, wow, 83.
Yeah.
Well, do you know if all those people also got psychological help? Because obviously they had problems.
So I really hope that they did for some of them. The issue is there were so many members of the cult, so, like, the ones who did get help, only some of them may have gotten the psychiatric help that they really needed.
Right. Either way, I still hope, because obviously some of those people are still alive because they were quite a bit younger than he was. And because of how accepting we are nowadays towards mental health issues and all of that fun stuff that you're bringing up can cause that you need, you know, therapies for and all that jazz. I hope they were able to get it at some point, even if it was after, you know, their time in jail. I just hope they were able to, you know, sort themselves out, because I know I've seen documentaries and I know a lot of them feel absolutely horrible for what happened.
Yeah, that's a nice way to end on a little positive note, like hoping they all got help. You know, the good thing is a fair amount of them did get help, especially, you know, as you said, with our society today. So, I mean, honestly, pretty interesting case. I mean, the guy was crazy, so that's kind of all I really have to say about him.
Yeah.
He kind of got what he deserved. Yeah, so that's pretty much it for today's episode. Thanks for sticking around till the end, and tune in next time to hear about the infamous drug smuggler, Pablo Escobar. And remember, don't be stupid. Say it with me.
Okay, you've never wanted me to say it with you before. You always just yell at me.
No, come on, do it.
And remember, don't be stupid and stay safe.
That was wonderful.